AP Radio News. Good morning. I'm Ed Donahue. The air search in the Java Sea is on hold because of darkness. An AirAsia jet was traveling from Indonesia to Singapore and is now unaccounted for. Communication was lost about 45 minutes into the flight. Before losing contact, the pilot had asked to change path because of weather. Aviation analyst Julian Bray says the pilot must have consulted all the maps.
Normally they can vector around the storms. They divert, go around the storm and carry on. It'll delay the passengers somewhat, but the ride will be a lot easier. Unfortunately, this seems to be a series of red blotches on the map. So whichever way the pilot went, he was bound to encounter one or the other.
He spoke to Sky News. 162 people were on board. The AP's Margie Mason reports the owner of Flight 8501 has never lost a plane.
AirAsia has had no accidents to date. It was founded in 2001, and it is a Malaysian airline, though this is an Indonesian subsidiary. It is a low-cost, no-frills airline that's popular with short-haul flights across Southeast Asia.
Meantime, off the Greek island of Corfu, a ferry carrying nearly 500 people caught fire, trapping passengers on the top decks. Rescue helicopters had to be brought in. No one has been reported injured. The ship was not immediately in any danger of sinking. In Queens, local resident Julio Rivera was not pleased when some New York police officers turned their backs on Mayor Bill de Blasio at the funeral for Officer Rafael Ramos.
You don't do that. Not at a time like this. I really don't think it was appropriate. You know, I think politics should have been set aside.
Some officers are upset with the mayor over his reaction to the Eric Garner case in New York. A ceremony today in Afghanistan in Kabul brings a formal end to the 13-year combat mission for the United States and NATO. This is AP Radio News. Ski resorts in Utah say Christmas Day snow put them back on course and allowed them to open additional lifts. Kyle Bellinger at Brighton Ski Resort says this is a big boost after a slow start to the season.
It was absolutely fantastic. You know, as far as the crowds go, we've definitely picked up here in the last few days. We've been pretty much capacity.
Many resorts in Utah delayed opening their runs and lifts because of light snow. Lava that had been stalled on its way to a shopping center on Hawaii's Big Island started moving again, advancing 15 yards. Abby Peterson works at the Pahoa Marketplace, and she's not leaving.
It took 30 years for that flow to take the town. So, you know, we could be in this for the long haul.
The lava had previously been on a pace to hit the marketplace around Christmas Day in Hawaii, but then it stopped moving. I'm Ed Donahue, AP Radio News.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Mercurio with Offutt and Kerman, and Mark Cohn with Optifor. Mark, would you please introduce our guest today?
Sure. We're starting off today with Rebecca Andino, the president and CEO of Highlight Technologies. Then we'll talk to Mike Brandt, president and CEO of iDoc Solutions. Third is Nick Sanna, the founder and president of Digital Risk Management Institute. And we'll end today with Rinaldi Rampin, COO and owner of Envisium.
Thank you. First up is Rebecca Andino, who's the president and CEO of a company called Highlight Technologies. Tell us a little bit about Highlight Technologies, Rebecca.
Well, Highlight Technologies is a woman-owned 8A small business. We're an IT contracting firm. We specialize in data architecture, software development, and information security. And we support about a dozen agencies in the civilian, DOD, and intelligence community.
When was the company founded?
2008.
And how big or small are you guys today?
We're about 65 employees.
So 2008 was an interesting time to start a business. What were you thinking?
Well, I was thinking that I wanted to take control of my destiny, do something new, and then use all of the skills that I had learned to sort of do something creative.
And why not do that inside of the company you were with? You have a very interesting background. You're very high achieving. Why not just hang out there?
Well, I felt that I had learned what I needed to do as a direct billable employee, and I thought there would be a lot more opportunities to do many different things if I started a company.
So it wasn't a scary thing for you to do, to start a business?
Well, I didn't know what I was doing, but I had a mentor who was encouraging me. She would review my business plans and give me advice, and I felt that if I could copy what she had done with her guidance, I could probably be successful.
So where did you get the confidence to take this kind of a risk? Were you confident as a kid?
I had some different leadership experiences. I was the editor of my high school newspaper, and I played volleyball, and I was one of the co-captains, so yeah.
Well, looking back on it, what do you think it takes to be a successful entrepreneur to launch a business? What do you have to get right?
You have to know what you're doing in terms of the performance. So you have to, if you're a technical person, you have to know the technology. If you're a project manager, you have to be competent.
As far as leadership attributes or personal characteristics, what do you have to have?
You have to have a lot of determination, because you're going to knock on a lot of doors before you get somebody to give you a contract. It doesn't happen overnight.
How long did it take you to get your first contract?
About 3 months.
Uh-huh. What was that period like for you?
Oh, it had its ups and downs. Some days I didn't even want to get out of bed, but I had to just keep making calls and going to meetings and meeting with people.
So what is it that got you out of bed?
Well, my husband was really supportive. He would say, you can do it. Don't worry. And that was
helpful. You had two babies at home at the time, right?
Yeah, I had two young kids. Yeah, now they're 11 and 7.
So was that challenging, trying to balance all that?
It was, but, at the time it was actually probably easier. Now it would have been a lot more challenging when you have a lot of kids' activities going on.
Mm-hmm.
You previously told us that you were a linguistics major. Is there a language to business?
There is. I think the words that you use are really important to describe what you do. Internally, we were having some discussions in my company, and, there's a big difference in nuances of language, how you describe yourself. If you're a consulting firm, if you're an integrator, if you're a contracting firm, they make a difference.
Well, say a little bit more about that. When did you realize how important that is to get the language right?
Oh, from the start. I mean, how you describe yourself to a potential customer, it's very important. When you're crafting your marketing materials, your website, I think that getting your story aligned in your branding is important for how your customers will perceive you.
So you mentioned that you doubled your size in the last year. You're now at 65 employees. How do you manage that? How did you learn to manage this kind of growth?
Oh, I feel like I'm still learning every day, honestly. We've been fortunate. We have, how Jim Collins has put the right people on the bus. We've been strategic in terms of the type of skill sets that we've brought on board. We have human resources and contracting, different people who are specialized in what they do to help manage.
You referenced earlier that it was your strong family values that made you who you are. Is there a value that you've taken from your childhood into your business?
I think a focus on education is something that my parents they always emphasized, and the continuous learning. Like, for example, even when I started the business, I went back and I got my MBA. So for the first 5 years of the company, I was taking classes at night to make sure that I knew different aspects of business. So, an emphasis on continuous learning was important.
So what is it that you need to learn in the next 2 years leading this business?
I think I need to I feel like I've really mastered the day-to-day of operations, and I need to continue to grow in strategy and thinking where the market is going and how to, use advanced skills in business and finance to take the business to the next level.
So that's the definition of a CEO, that kind of leadership journey. Mm-hmm. Was it tough for you to stop the work and be billable and then transition into leadership?
Oh, yeah. That was definitely tough.
And what was the toughest part?
Taking the risk, because, at the time we were small. We were under 20 people when I did that. And so that was actually hidden revenue. So I had to be confident that we would be able to grow enough to make up for that. And we were.
How would you characterize your leadership style?
I would say I'm kind of a quiet leader. I try to lead by example, and I try to encourage teamwork among the team.
How do you manage personal life balance? So you started off, you had two babies, a brand new business, and then you also decided to get a master's degree in business.
It's been a challenge. And actually, to add to that, my husband is a restaurant manager, so he works nights. So, but we've actually made it work for us because, like, for example, if he works in the nighttime, he can be off during the day to take the kids to, like, a doctor's appointment or something. So it actually works to our advantage. But you have to be really organized.
As long as nobody has to sleep.
Yeah.
That's good.
Where are you from?
So I was born in Korea, and I was adopted. And I was adopted as a baby, and I was raised mostly in Montgomery County, Maryland.
What do you remember most about your childhood?
Well, we moved a few times, so I got to go to a few different schools, and I read a lot of books, and I don't know, I had a normal childhood, though.
Looking back, did you ever think you'd ever start a company?
No, I don't think so, but I don't think I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah. What was your first job? How did you first start making money? Way back when.
My first job, I think I sold Girl Scout cookies, and I made pot holders, and I sold them in the neighborhood, but that was when I was a little kid. My first.
Why did you do that?
Oh, just to make money, and you know, it's kind of exciting to make a sale. Like you knock on the door to a complete stranger, and then they buy what you have. So that's very rewarding.
Where do you want the company to be in 5 years?
I'd like us to double or triple in size at least, and I'd like us to be a leading systems integrator for federal agencies.
What would you say the toughest thing you've ever accomplished is? Rebecca?
Probably to start the business, because it was something that I didn't know how to do. I didn't really have any real supporter to give me a first contract like some companies do, but I was able to do it.
What do you think your first customer saw in you to convince them to buy from you?
I had the right credentials that they were looking for.
I don't think customers buy credentials. I think they buy people. What did they see in you?
I felt they could trust that they could send me to a customer site and I wouldn't embarrass them. I would have the knowledge to do what was needed.
How would you describe your company's culture?
I think it's very collaborative at the headquarters level, and it's very customer focused, and in order to support our customers best, we try to support our employees as if they are customers.
Yeah, so when you're interviewing an employee, how do you know you have someone you want to hire right in front of you? What are you looking for?
Lack of arrogance. You know, if you ask them a question, they're no matter what kind of question you ask them, they'll take it seriously and answer it.
Mm-hmm. What's your proudest moment up till now?
It's silly, but I'm really proud that we have an office, a nice office that people can come to. I have a business partner, and he was really... he was helpful in making sure that we present the right image, and I never really cared about it, but it's kind of exciting to have somebody come to your office.
It's not the first time I've heard that. Young companies get their first office, and it's like, wow, we're for real.
Yeah.
Was that your experience?
Yeah, it was really exciting.
How about your biggest disappointment professionally up to now? How'd you handle that?
I don't know if I've had a really big disappointment. You know, sometimes when employees, when they leave your company, you know, they say some hurtful things. I mean, that's disappointing. Right. I don't know if I've had any big, like, nosedives
yet. Fair enough. What's the website address?
www.highlighttechnologies.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Rebecca Andino, who's the president and CEO of Highlight Technologies. I'd like to thank Mike Mercurio and Mark Cohen for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, we'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
InPowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers mm-hmm. and leaders mm-hmm. Achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey mm-hmm. that the better I was at being a good human being, the better mm-hmm. leader and the better business I ran and mm-hmm. the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for, as well as help the organization move forward?
Well, to move an organization forward, mm-hmm. you've got to master the soft skills of mm-hmm. dealing with people effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. both parties.
Mm-hmm.
You have to communicate confidently.
Mm-hmm.
I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong mm-hmm. leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to this work, but not mm-hmm. exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
David Shulman.
And David, the organization is?
Information Concepts.
And what makes Information Concepts special?
We're a fixed-price, full-lifecycle custom software development shop.
Wait, your fixed-price software development. How long have you guys been around?
32 years.
So how do you manage to do that? You must have some very special processes to make sure that you sell what you can deliver with confidence and then deliver what you sell. Otherwise, you wouldn't be around this long. Do you have any repeat customers?
All our customers are repeat customers.
So you're telling me that customers buy software development from you because they know they get a fixed price, they know what they're going to get. Do you guarantee a timeline also?
Absolutely. Everything's guaranteed. Every screen, every process, every report, line item and priced, and every line item has a date.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me that all the interim processes are dated and priced so that when you get to the final result, there's no surprises?
Exactly.
Huh. And how long have you been doing this for?
We've been doing it 32 years. What we've done in the last few years, if I might, is developed a visualization process that allows the clients to actually see what we're going to build and take it out for a test drive and kick the tires without
wow.
us writing a line of code.
What's the website address for this organization?
Infoconcepts.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Infoconcepts.com.
This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Mercurio with Offutt, and Mark Cohen with Opti4. And for this segment, we have Mike Brandt, who's the president and CEO of iDocs Solutions. Tell us a little bit about iDocs, Mike.
iDocs is a company that provides business solutions through IT. Most people either approach someone who may have a problem from the business side, or from the IT side. We try and talk with the business owner or the person who manages the mission, payables, someone doing payroll or processing a complaint, and understand what the issues are, whether they're getting it done on time, whether there's issues, exceptions, and then apply technology to it to streamline that process, with the result being increased productivity or efficiency.
Great. How long has this organization been around?
iDocs was organized. I organized it in 2002, and before that I had another company, DocSys, which we started in 93.
How big or small is iDocs today?
We're about 50 people.
Mm-hmm. What is it about you that has to start companies?
I guess my whole life I've just felt that being controlling my own destiny, being able to do the right thing, deliver results, was really what it was all about.
So controlling your own destiny, take us back to when that became important to you.
Well, as long as I can remember. I don't know when your first thought is, but there was an experience that I had when I was very young, 5 years old, and I had polio. And it was just about the time the Salk vaccine came out, and they said I wouldn't walk again, or, I would, whatever you do. But my mother didn't believe that. And I recall being in my bedroom with her doing the bicycle with my legs over and over and over again. And she had a record playing. It was a little 45, I guess. Puffin' Toot, I think I can, I think I can, I know I can, I know I can. And she just instilled she was confident. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. She said, Mike, you're going to walk. Mike, you're going to walk. No problem. We're going to make it happen. And from that day on, I just felt I can do it.
So you walked.
Right.
How do you suppose that experience shaped you?
Well, I think when I go into any situation, A, I'm looking for the best in people because I'm looking for the best in me, and whatever the situation is, I'm trying to find the answer. I'm trying to figure out how we can make it better. I think that's it.
And you have this just fundamental belief that things can get better.
Yes.
You have proof.
Yes.
So talk about this notion of control. How did that come out of that experience?
Well, maybe the best way of talking about it is in the business sense. Out of the University of Maryland, I went to work for RCA Computers, and in 1970, it's much like it was today. There's IBM and everybody else, and so I didn't really realize that. I had a job, and I was trying to sell computers. But I came in one Monday morning. They were done. They said, that's it. You got 1 year. We'll give you 2 weeks vacation. So that's when I said, wait a minute. This isn't right. I need to be with somebody that is either the leader in their field or I have to have my own business. And from there, I went to work for Xerox, which was the number one, and had a 20-year career before I started my first company.
Great.
So the childhood experience where your mother was helping you get through polio created who you are. Where would you be if she wasn't like that and didn't try to help you?
Well, that's a tough question because, I don't know. I can't even imagine what it would have been like. I really don't know. I mean, because I have not known anything else except just that's who she created in me.
Overcoming polio is obviously a big challenge. Tell us about another key challenge in your life.
Well, it was a challenge. It was a crossroads. When I interview people to come to my company, I'm more interested in them. So I always ask them to give me three things in their life that, at the crossroad, what path did they take? So in answering that for you, I was at the University of Maryland. I was playing football, and I was in the electrical engineering program. And football was pretty demanding, from morning till night, filled in by going to school. And I just didn't have enough time to do my studies. And you have to have a 2.0 to play. And I was slipping below that. So I was around the table with my advisors, academic advisors, and the coaches. And they said, okay, big boy, you're going to be an engineer, or are you going to play football? I said, I'm going to play football. They were paying for it. And that was a challenge because I wanted to be in that engineering program, but I had to make a decision. And so I switched to the School of Business and graduated with a degree in marketing, and they were paying for it. And so life was good.
Other than being in control of your own destiny, what do you like most about owning a company?
It's about the people. We don't make medicine, or we don't make things. We don't really have anything. It's our service. And the tagline on our iDoc Solutions site is experience, commitment, results. It starts with experience. So I'm always, when I'm interviewing people, I want to know who they are first. They come with a resume and it says I did X, Y, and Z, so I'm assuming that they have some technical or some background, but I want to know who they are. And we have a great company with people that I love, I trust, and I respect.
A lot is being written about a term called grit and how important it is to success, way above in talent and intelligence. What would you say to that?
I buy that. I buy that because it's about attitude. There's a saying, and I probably will mess it up, but 10% in life is what happens to you, and 90% is how you deal with it. And I just believe you can overcome. You can do it.
Right.
I'm thinking about going back to you were working at Xerox, and you reached the decision that you wanted to go start your own company. What happened?
Well, for the last 5 years that I was at Xerox, we had started a new group called Custom Systems. Xerox, very successful on one hand in creating technologies. Everybody's probably familiar with the Palo Alto Research Center, the mouse and Windows and all the rest of that. But Xerox obviously did not take advantage of all those developments. They didn't make any money out of them. But at this time in 1987, they said, let's try and become a systems integrator. Let's pursue a solution and put as many pieces of Xerox product into it as we could. And so I did that, and we created a very successful $40-50 million business, profitable. I said, whoa, why am I doing this for Xerox? can do this for myself. And there were some guys, Bob Hanley had a company, and he said, I believe in you, Mike, and Doxus was born.
Is your mom aware of your success?
My mom has now passed 2 years.
Uh-huh. So
she was very aware. Yeah.
Was she surprised?
I don't think so.
If I was interviewing her today, right now, what would she say about you?
I think she'd say it about me and my three brothers, my younger brothers. She would say, I knew you could do it. Yeah. I knew you could do it. Every day when we would leave for school or whatever it was, she'd just say, be yourself. You'll be successful.
And if your mom was sitting here today, what would you say to her?
I love you, Mom.
That's great. What's the website address, Mike?
www.idoxsolutions, I-D-O-X solutions, all one word, .com.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Mike Brent. He's the president and CEO of IDOX Solutions. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mike Mercurio, with Offa Kerman, and Mark Cohen, with Optifor. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the marketing director.
And as the marketing director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the D.C. area, mm-hmm. As well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Right. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client? The perfect client.
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. This is Les Mullen, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Mercurio with Offutt Kerman, and Mark Cohen with Optifor. And for this segment, we have Nick Sanna, who's the founder and president of an organization called Digital Risk Management Institute. What is Digital Risk Management Institute, Nick?
Well, the DRM Institute is an expert nonprofit organization that helps large corporations and government agencies to manage digital risk from the business perspective.
When was the company founded?
Just three months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Why go the nonprofit route?
Because we wanted to have an independent forum where large government agencies and corporations could collaborate without fear of influence from corporate sponsors to develop a set of knowledge and best practices related to managing digital risk.
And what is your vision for this company, this organization?
It's to become the premier venue for and reference for best practices in helping these companies really take a business view on managing digital risk.
And how exposed is American business today? Is it
very exposed, very exposed, because I think that businesses have, in the last 20 years, digitalized and computerized a lot of their business processes, enjoyed the flexibility and the increase in productivity that that brought along, and until recently didn't pay enough attention to what it meant from the security perspective.
Nick, what do you think it's in, that's in your background that leads you to want to manage and understand and otherwise deal with risk?
Well, as a few episodes, in terms of lead and manage, from the very beginning, I remember as a child, I was 6 years old, I was getting the kids together and always inventing new games, such as organizing trivia competitions, and with the goal of providing a forum for these kids to meet and to learn new things, and I just loved leading. And from the security perspective, some events of my past, of my childhood, marked me quite strikingly. One episode I remember, we were in Romania, my father's a diplomat, and I remember I surprised my dad with an ambassador of another country having a business discussion in the bathroom with the faucets open. The water was running, and they were having a conversation. I asked him afterwards, what's going on here? And he said, we're having a confidential discussion, and because there's microphones in the house, and we don't have even freedom at the embassy to speak about confidential things, that's what we have to do. And then I realized that even the maids at the house that were financed by the government had to file reports with the Secret Service every day. I became keenly aware of security implications since that day.
So say a little bit more about that. How old were you when that incident occurred?
I was 7 years old.
So were you outraged to know this, or what? How did it affect you emotionally to discover all this?
It's like, I discovered a new dimension, a world I didn't know about was revealed to me.
Did you feel like you had to do something about it?
I was interested in finding out how to find those microphones in the walls of my house, how to run away from the person following us on our ways to school, and I tried to trick them and to see how effective these systems were.
Okay.
So what were you thinking when the Berlin Wall came down?
Well, I remember I was an exchange student in Rome at that time, and I remember as soon as I got the news, I started crying. It was uncontrolled sentiment. I remember being in Romania with my family. My father was stationed there, and we were living in compounds. Even at the park, there was a park reserved only for foreigners. And I remember looking through the gates of the golf course where we foreigners and capitalists were basically enjoying ourselves and seeing these kids looking at us, some of them poorly clothed, hungry. And I could relate to him as another kid, can I say a friend of mine almost, but we were completely separated by these walls. And when I thought that when the wall came down, I thought I can suddenly relate with these people. I can suddenly meet these people in a way that I couldn't enjoy when I was a kid.
And that's kind of what's happened in the digital age. Suddenly you can touch just about anybody.
Absolutely. I think this last 20 years has been a an exhilarating ride for many of us because we enjoy the benefits of communicating through the internet and through digital means, both in business. We could connect with many more employees and partners in real time.
And that comes with risk.
Absolutely. I think we opened up many new ways of communicating, but as a consequence, there's many more doors for people to exploit.
So in certain situations, walls and boundaries are a good idea.
Absolutely. And that's something that we need to learn to manage better.
So you were really happy when the walls came down, but your job now is to put walls up.
Well, no. I think that this was the myth until recently. I think we thought that we could put walls up and have total protection, only to realize it is always a moving target. And we're getting a bit smart about it in helping through the institutes to think about it as a risk management problem. What are the threats out there? What our weaknesses, and how much risk are we willing to take to enjoy some of those benefits? And we want to help corporations and hopefully in the future also individuals manage through this process so they can find this balance between enjoying the freedoms that the digital world gives us and the security we need to also enjoy.
Is it a correct statement to say that you like to bring organization to chaos?
Absolutely, yes. I think that today, corporations and large organizations don't know how to manage risk from the business perspective. They thought it was a technical problem, and now suddenly they realize it's a business issue. It's a judgment issue. Where to invest, how to invest, what assets to protect, it is a business decision more than a technical decision.
When did you first come to the United States?
I came in the year 2000.
What was that experience like for you, particularly coming from a Iron Curtain country?
It was a liberating experience. I think that nobody in this country ever judged me for my origin. I was given the opportunity to start and manage businesses in ways that my own countries of origin did not enjoy me to. And yeah. So I could understand after a few years why, you know, this flag means so much to these people, because yeah. It was true for me.
Other than launching a career and a mission for you, what's the gift of your time in Romania?
The gift of my time in Romania is that walls are not eternal. We can break walls, and we can, and that's, you know, this tendency towards a more united world is something that remained with me because I suffered the lack of it. And but you want to do it in a way that is secure and protects you as an individual, as a country. Enjoying the differences while respecting the necessary privacy and dignity of each person as it became a passion for me.
Great. What does success look like for your institute in 2 years, 5 years?
Well, success is give birth to a new industry. Not only look at security from a technical perspective, you've seen the birth of many cybersecurity companies in the last 10, 20 years, but to help business leaders understand how to manage security. They delegated to technicians who try to plug holes, but now they understand, the board members are telling them, you need to understand risk before starting a new business venture. Launch a new movie, see what happened with Sony. You got to think about the risk implications of what you're doing and understand how to manage that.
What did you learn from your father?
That what I learned from him is that you got to ask to get something. My father was from Italian origin. And he was always asking for help, asking for, for permission to do things. And in a way, sometimes it made me uncomfortable, only to realize many years later that he got to places because of that, that persistence, and it became a great value for me as well.
And your mom?
And for my mom, I'll tell you a story. I think I told you about my desire to build a more united world. I asked her one day, why do you spend so much time cooking? She's Italian. And she told me, because we build the unity of the family at the table. And by the way, your dad will never go away if he eats better here than anywhere else. So everybody's a candidate for unity, even through food.
There you go. What's your proudest moment up till now, Nick?
Proudest moment up to now was probably... moving over the Atlantic and telling my wife that we're going to go on a new adventure that will change our lives, and not fully understanding what it meant, but following my heart. I threw my heart over the fence and then tried to catch it.
Yeah. How about the most difficult thing you've ever accomplished?
The most difficult thing I ever accomplished?
Starting the business?
Starting the business is easy because it's going to say, I think it's probably scaling a business.
Scaling the business.
Scaling a business in the sense that starting a business, you're following intuition, you're fearless as an entrepreneur, it becomes natural. Scaling a business, you need to start, can I say, embracing a lot of operational disciplines that may not get all of creative juices working, but are essential to the success of the enterprise.
So relying on others.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
So working as a team, this is what this country taught me the most.
Yeah. Great. What's the website address?
The website address is www.drminstitute.org.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Nick Sanna, who's the founder and president of Digital Risk Management Institute. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Mike Mercurio with Offit Kerman and Mark Cohen with Opti4 for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tyson's Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying. And since then, he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offitkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offit Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Opti4. Wes, what is Opti4?
Opti4 is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs, and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place, a close would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No, although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett, a law firm. Mark, welcome. What is Cohn & Burnett?
We are a law firm that focuses on trusts and estates. So we do wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate planning, and estate administration.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the founder and the senior partner.
So what does it mean to be a senior partner?
Well, it means that in our case, I'm the thought leader, the visionary, the one who tries to figure out where we're headed. I'm not the managing partner who runs the day-to-day operations.
Okay, and what makes Cohn & Burnett so special?
We are, first of all, focused on taking care of our clients and just on their estate planning and administration. And I think we're one of the first firms in the area to introduce a fixed fee for doing estate planning.
Interesting. And what do they really appreciate about you and the company, your clients, that is?
You know, the clients tell me that they just love the experience. They are very comfortable and confident that their needs are being met here, and they enjoy working with us.
Hmm. And who or what is your perfect client, if you will?
Our perfect client is anybody who cares about what's going to happen to them when they can no longer take care of themselves or their family.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you actually enjoy most about the work?
You know, talking to the clients. That's the part. I could turn over all of the work to other attorneys here, but I hold on to the first part, which is meeting the clients, talking to them, getting to know them, getting to understand where they're, what they need and what they're looking for.
That's great. What's the website for Cohn & Burnett?
CohnAndBurnett.com, all spelled out, the A and D in between there.
Thank you, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Mike Mercurio with Offutt Kerman and Mark Cohn with Optifor. And for this segment, we have Rinaldi Rampin, who's the COO and owner of a company, co-owner of a company called Envisium. What is Envisium, Rinaldi?
Sure. So Envisium, we are an application security company helping organizations build more secure software.
What does that mean?
So in today's world, there's more and more companies building software for businesses as well as consumers. Based on headlines and such, you can see that there's a lot of insecurities with regards to building software.
So you address that need?
Yes, we try to help them very closely in terms of building secure secure applications and making sure that the information is protected.
And the company was founded when?
In 2009.
And you joined when?
I joined January of this year.
Uh-huh. Why did you want to be a part of this organization?
Two things. One, I believed in what we do and what we're trying to accomplish. The idea of helping organizations fix bugs, software bugs, is important and needs to be done, and so that was the first interest. And second, I was given basically an opportunity to be a part owner, partner of a thriving technology company.
So you, how many partners do you have?
Four.
What's it like to have four partners, or three?
It's interesting. It's a great dynamic. Obviously, we have our good days and bad days. But I think it's maybe similar to maybe like a law firm or a CPA firm where there's multiple partners, basically organization where they're trying to solve the same thing, but different ideas.
So what did you study in school?
So I studied political science. I was a poli-sci major at George Mason University.
But you've always been in computers.
Correct. By luck or by growing up around computers. My father was in computers, and so I've always been involved with the computers.
So then what were you thinking if when you were studying political science, but you stayed in computers?
Sure. So growing up, I wanted to be the first Asian senator of the state of Virginia, or the Commonwealth of Virginia, sorry. But then I was very technology driven. I still am. And my love for technology kind of overtook my initial wants of being being in political.
You referenced that you came to this company because you had an opportunity to be an owner. Why is that important to you?
I've always wanted the chance to be part of an ownership or run an organization. It has always been important to me to try to kind of have a better control over my own destiny, and so that was the biggest draw.
How old were you when you first noticed the need to control your own destiny?
I think it was pretty young. Both my parents worked, and I started my own, like, quote-unquote business when I was, I think, 11.
Doing what?
Cutting grass and doing yard work in the neighborhood. Born and raised in Northern Virginia, so it was in Vienna that I was doing this.
So what'd you do with the money?
At first, I thought I made a long list of everything I could purchase with the money. but then I quickly, from my mom pushing it on me, I built a list of how I can grow the business instead of spending the money I made.
So how big did you get the business?
I had three family members working with me. but that's when I realized, okay, maybe I could try to do something else besides cutting grass and raking leaves.
So now that you're an owner of a business and you've been at the IT profession for quite a while, why are you glad you took political science?
Well, I think, I guess I said earlier I was very technology-driven. But I think my greatest trait, or what I know, I think I'm the best at, is building relations, networking with people, and I think there's a lot of parallels to that in like political science or politics.
Yeah. When did it dawn on you that relationships trump technology?
It was one of my mentors at one of the consulting companies I was working at in about 2000, where I was the tech sort of head in a room, and he turned to me and said, okay, you need to make that change, or you need to make that decision of, are you going to be the technical guy for the rest of your life, or are you going to be, you know, sort of the in-between technology people and the business people? And I went for the latter.
How do four partners in business make decisions and avoid dispute?
Great question. I think most of the time majority rules, but then there's also sort of a managing partner where if there is a tie of sorts, somebody has to at the table make that decision. And so Jack, who started the company, Jack Menino, is that tiebreaker for us.
But that's not the whole story. I mean, you know, how do you manage the egos? I mean, the whole partnerships are tough.
Oh no, agreed.
How do you keep it clean?
Certainly. So you have to check. I mean, I know it's a little bit cliche, but you do have to check the egos at the door. We don't always agree on everything. I mean, I can't say we agree on everything all the time. But I think the benefit that we have is we do definitely think things through, kind of lay out all the thought processes. And there's a lot of compromises that are made.
So you mentioned that you were an entrepreneur as a kid. What else do you remember from your childhood that kind of shaped who you are today?
I grew up in a modest home. Both my parents worked, so I had a lot of time to myself. So time management was something that I had to really learn at a young age. I had to get myself, obviously, come home from school, do my homework, get the practices, get home from practices and stuff. A lot of that was kind of put on myself.
So you're a version of a latchkey kid, right?
Yes, sir. Definitely.
So what does a latchkey kid learn that maybe a baby boomer doesn't?
Independence, being able to kind of take care of yourself, maybe in some cases fight for yourself in a sense. Not in necessarily a bad way, but just kind of like you have to have some street smarts to kind of make it through.
Any influences other than mom and dad that you remember?
My mom's a huge part of it.
So say a little bit about mom.
So I am your prototypical mama's boy, very, very close to my mom. She taught, she was the more emotional one, and I'm probably the more emotional sibling. And so I can sort of learn a lot from her based on our personalities are very similar.
Uh-huh. And your dad?
He is your guy's guy. You know, he gets up every morning, does his thing. You know, as a child, I remember going to work every day, doing what he needs to do to provide for the family and such. Wasn't a man of a lot of words, a lot of action, though.
Uh-huh. And you've been in the Northern Virginia area your entire life as far as being raised?
Yes, I was born and raised here. I did leave Northern Virginia to go to Silicon Valley because I thought that's where every technology person goes to.
What'd you learn from that experience?
That I'm not a California guy, that I missed the Mid-Atlantic, that I missed the Four Seasons, and so I came back.
What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished, Rinaldi?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know. To be perfectly honest, I think right now, I think my greatest accomplishment is raising three boys. Fair to enough. Be respectable people. So I think that's right now probably that my biggest accomplishment.
How about your proudest moment?
Again, it's probably more reflected to my kids.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, as hard as I work, as much enjoyment I have in my business or work life, at the end of the day, I only want to be known for the stuff I do with my family.
Fair enough. What's the website address?
So our website address is www.envisium.com.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Rinaldi Rampin, who's the co-owner of Envisium. I'd like to thank all our hosts, our guests today, for doing such a great job. Mark, will you take us through who was on with us?
Sure, Pete. We started today with Rebecca Andino, the president and CEO of Highlight Technologies. Then Mike Brandt, president and CEO of IDOC Solutions. Third was Nick Sanna, the founder and president of Digital Risk Management Institute. And we are just now hearing from Rinaldi Rampin, COO and owner of Envisium.
And I'd like to thank my two co-hosts today, Mike Mercurio with Offit Kerman and Mark Cohen with Optifor, for doing such a great job with the questions. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. And if you want to hear the show again, you can hear it at businesstalkradio.net. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Today, you ate Greek yogurt. You took the train. You wondered why people spend so much time reading celebrity blogs. You read a celebrity blog. You planned a workout. You skipped it. You did all the things that one normally does the day before a devastating earthquake shakes the community to the ground. You never know when the day before is the day before. Prepare for tomorrow at ready.gov/today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. First, she'll crawl. Then take her first baby steps. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school. I'll be watching her run down a soccer field. Staying up all night waiting for her to get home from her first date. Wincing when she steps on the gas pedal and then the brakes. Beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma. Or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Gather your family, friends, and co-workers and join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
I can't believe it. I lost my house, my wife, my family, and my job. Everything.
If you or someone you know has tried but can't stop gambling, you should know that problem gambling could be an addiction.
While gambling is entertainment for some people, for over 150,000 people in Maryland, it's a devastating medical condition.
Are you at risk? Call the Maryland Center on Problem Gambling Helpline, 1-800-GAMBLER, or go to mdproblemgambling.com. We can help.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT-FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial.